From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
And hello, and welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for the week ending August 17th. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio here in our studios across the street from the state capitol, and our good friend Anthony York from Capitol Weekly is down south in Malibu again this morning, right?
The Malibu Bureau, yes, phoning it in, as always, and yet only for the second time, literally.
The beautiful Malibu Bureau. I've got to get down there sometime.
Yeah, I should come on down.
Well, we're talking about the week's political news here, and actually, I think we're kind of like on Groundhog Day, are we not? We're still kind of focused on the state budget impasse, which we think something might change. We hope something might change when the Assembly comes back to Sacramento next week. Do you think anything's changed in the last week in terms substantively on this, Anthony?
Well, I don't know about substantively. There were a lot of rumors going around this week about various meetings at the Capitol. We had been hearing reports that Attorney General Jerry Brown had met with Bob Dutton, a Republican senator from
Rancho Cucamonga,
thank you, who is rumored to be the main target now for the 27th vote. And I believe that members of the Schwarzenegger administration were in on this meeting and Senate Democratic leadership as well, trying to come up with some sort of compromise on the Environmental Quality Act reforms and changes that that Republicans want in order to get a budget. There was talks of meetings this week that there might have been a vote towards the end of this week. We're now recording this on Friday, and I know that the Senate was hoping to get this done before Monday, at least to have a deal in place. That doesn't seem to be the case, at least today, so I guess it's just hold your breath and wait and see what happens on Monday.
Well, and I think we saw a little bit of this attention towards Senator Dutton come out in public because the governor made his little tour, his budget stop tour, which coincidentally was in Republican districts this week. And he did go down to the Inland Empire and did talk on the record about how, you know, helpful he's been or how helpful it's been working with Senator Dutton or something, almost a bit of code there.
Yeah, and Dutton's name had been kicked around, has been kicked around now for 6 weeks. I mean, we were hearing on July 20th that it was going to be Dutton instead of Denham. Jeff Denham, the more moderate Republican senator from Modesto, who was often seen as an easier target for the 27th vote in order to get a two-thirds majority in the Senate. Denham has dug in his heels this time around, for reasons for which I believe we've discussed on previous podcasts.
We have.
and so Dutton's name was sort of floated as the chief target for whatever the reason. I'm not exactly sure why, but that seems to be the conventional wisdom and the way that these negotiations are proceeding. So the fact that Dutton's name has been circulated and that the governor is publicly coaxing and coddling Bob Dutton is not surprising to those of us who've been watching the standoff now for the last 6 weeks.
And let's remind our 7, 8, 9 listeners. I think we're growing to 9 now, Anthony.
Yay. All right.
But let's remind the listeners that it takes 2 Republican votes in the Senate to pass the budget, and that's what we're doing here. We've already got 1, Abel Maldonado, Republican senator from Santa Maria.
Right.
And so they've got to get that elusive last vote. But let's talk briefly about the governor's tour this week, because it kind of started off on a bit of a tough note, did it not? I mean, clearly we had this trip, well, first of all, he went to Santa Maria at the beginning of the week and kind of put his arm around Abel Maldonado and thanked him
finally,
for voting for the budget.
Maybe a year and a half too late for Abel's liking.
Yeah, for Maldonado's political fortunes for statewide office, as he wanted last year, that he didn't
get.
But then he went to the Central Valley and pretty strongly said Senator Denham should be feeling the heat, should be calling him. And Denham came back with a very sharply worded public press statement attacking the governor of his own party.
Yeah, and you know there were op-eds back and forth. Mike Janess, the director of the Department of Finance, wrote an op-ed this week in Denham's hometown paper, in the Modesto Bee, sort of calling Denham out and telling him it was time to vote for the budget. And Denham responded, and Denham's chief of staff had some very sharp words for Mike Janess, something to the effect of, when Susan Kennedy pulls your chain, Mike, you should you know, do something other than, you know, and tells you to jump, do something other than ask how high.
And Susan Kennedy, a long target for those Republicans, the Democratic chief of staff of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Absolutely, So that was the beginning of the week. I was waiting for the governor to start calling Jeff Denham a girly man. I mean, this was reminiscent of, this was like 2004, 2005 all over again, except that the Republicans now were the target of the governor's sharp words and elbows. But that did seem to change. Was that your perception as well, that this changed a little bit as the week went on?
Yeah, I think it was. And, you know, the governor's folks, you know, quite frankly asked them about, you know, the obvious sign that they're going to Republican districts. I mean, conceded that what they're in a battle for, I think they think here, are the hearts and minds of certain Republican voters. You know, and I think they believe that that rank and file Republican voters are on their side with this notion that if the governor blew pencils about $700 million in additional spending to balance his budget, then those Republican rank-and-file voters will be happy. And I think if they think they're on their side, then, yeah, they've got a coordinated campaign here that seems to make sense on that end.
Right.
Of course, the other end is that while we continue this, the impasse, things keep just stalling and stalling. A piece that I did this week for the California Report talks about the unpaid bills racking up. And it's just amazing, like 37,000 bills piling up at Caltrans alone, and $15 million of unpaid bills at the Department of General Services, $17 million of unpaid bills at the California Highway Patrol. I mean,
I'm starting to feel a little better about the PG&E and other utility bills sitting on my kitchen table waiting for me at home.
If only you could put those vendors off as long as the state's
theirs
off. Although, quite frankly, the state's got to pay a pot of late fees. I mean, I don't think a lot of people really understand this, but a lot of these outside companies are paid late penalty fees. And I think the estimate at Caltrans alone, those folks told me this week, is $278,000 in late penalties of taxpayer money at this point.
And John, you probably know this better than I. You probably followed this more closely this week, but I know that there are a number of private businesses that rely on payments from the state. We've heard a lot about senior health care centers.
Right.
That are being forced to either close their doors or take out high-interest short-term loans just to make payroll and keep their doors open.
Yeah, and I think what's fascinating about that is on one hand, these two things are not, I have full disclosure, are not, you know, overtly tied together in the budget, but I can't help but noticing them, that, you know, we've got a lot of outside vendors of basically people we contract out to do services that the state contracts out with who aren't getting paid. And at the same time, the Republican budget proposal in the Senate was talking about eliminating vacant jobs. In other words, kind of maybe possibly shrinking the workforce of state government. So it's kind of like, you know, maybe we don't have state workers and we also have vendors who we're not necessarily sure we're going to pay yet. It's an only in California story, I guess.
Right, but is it your sense though that are we willing to open up the office pool again? Are we going to get this resolved next week?
I don't know. I mean, I think you've laid out an interesting scenario that they may be close to this elusive second vote in the Senate. I just wonder though if when the assembly comes back on Monday, there's not a strong temptation to crack open this nut again and break open the entire budget and look at it. I mean, I think that one of the other great mysteries around the Capitol, and tell me if you know anything about this, is this elusive $700 million that the governor says he's going to blue pencil. Now, that's
right.
Not a small amount of money.
No.
That's a, you know, historically, that's a fairly large amount of line item vetoing out of a budget. And no one really knows what's in that $700 million. And you've got to imagine one of the reasons is that if liberal Democrats found out what was going to be vetoed, perhaps they would start grumbling about the budget their leaders agreed to.
Well, and my understanding is that even when this budget was passed out of the assembly, that 500 of the $700 million was agreed to with the okay of Mike Vallines, the assembly Republican leader, and Speaker Fabian Nunez, that was part of the deal to get the budget out. That the leadership in the assembly and on both sides of the aisle had come to an agreement with the administration on what was going to be cut, and more importantly, what was not going to be cut in the governor's line item veto extravaganza that awaits in the next couple of weeks after we finally do get a budget.
Yeah. That being said, though, I mean, I do think it's a pretty closely guarded secret among other people around the Capitol. Several of my sources have said it's hard to figure out exactly what that $700 million is. And again, like I said, you could have interest groups and other lawmakers galore really beating it to death if they knew what he was going to cut out.
Right.
So you're feeling like we should open the office pull back.
I don't know. I mean, you know, if anyone's willing. I mean, I know that people are probably saving their money for their fantasy football leagues, which will be ramping up here in the next couple of weeks. I know you are, Myers. So
I'm on a public radio salary here.
Oh, right.
I mean, I do think you raise a good point though, which is that if some compromise can be reached, I mean, if you can get that elusive second vote, you could have a budget by what, midweek. But I mean.
Or at least announce an agreement by Monday.
It would seem to me, though, that if we go late into next week and we haven't heard anything, that's probably not a great sign.
No. Well, and the other thing to consider here is that, you know, the end of August is the deadline for assembly bills to clear the fiscal committees in the Senate and vice versa, Senate bills to clear fiscal bills in the assembly. So if we're still talking about a budget, we could be, we could be running up against some of these bill deadlines. Senator Perotta has said that the Senate will take up no other business until we have a budget. If that's the case, a lot of assembly bills are going to die over the next couple of weeks in the Senate Appropriations Committee.
Do you think, by the way, let's hit on that for a moment, because, you know, Assembly Speaker Fabio Nunez has not made the same pledge in the Assembly. Is there a bit of a gap between the two of them there?
Well, there is, but the thing to consider now is that the bills that are in the Assembly now are Senate bills, and the bills that are in the Senate are the Assembly bills. So if the Senate shuts down business, that hurts the Assembly.
Right. So it's even more of the dance between the two chambers would have to be played out.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about quickly our second topic. By the way, this is an abbreviated podcast because I think we've just kind of come to the conclusion that there's not a heck of a lot of other political news going on out there. But we were talking before we started recording this about some new statewide polling and the race for president. I guess nothing terribly unexpected out of those polls, but strengthening of the front runners, eh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think two sort of trends. Sort of manifest themselves. The fading of John McCain, who's fallen to a distant fourth, even in California, among Republican voters, and the widening of the lead of Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama. So Hillary Clinton now has a 30-point lead over Obama in California. All this week, she's been rolling out legislators as if two by two, as if they were on Noah's Ark. It's sort of Hillary's arc of support, and arc is increasing here as more and more assembly members and jump on the Clinton bandwagon, and her nomination, or at least her victory in California, is starting to feel a little bit inevitable. I know it's early. I know nobody's voted on anything yet, but certainly Clinton's growing support has to be frustrating for the Obama campaign, not just in California, but nationwide.
But I mean, you may be right, but just to be a contrarian here for a moment, I mean, the Obama campaign is somewhat predicated on this notion of being a different kind of politics and outside of the conventional wisdom of politics. And these endorsements are very conventional. And I mean, you got to wonder, I mean, do they really carry weight at the end of the day?
Well, different kind of politics, you still need the same kind of votes. And whether that's from elected officials, I don't think it's the endorsements per se that are worrying the Obama camp, but because he has sort of taken on this underdog campaign, sort of the theme of his campaign. But that 30-point lead, I mean, that's not among elected officials. Those are among honest to God voters and real Democratic voters who will be deciding who gets the electoral or the delegates to the convention in February. So, you know, I mean, there's still a few months here. There's still, 5 months until Californians go to the polls. But Obama's definitely got his work cut out for him.
So what we're referencing here, for those of you who didn't see it, it's the field poll this week. Field polls on the Democratic and Republican side showing Hillary Clinton still strong in California. And on the Republican side, Rudy Giuliani still strong in California, which, I mean, I'm not sure anybody would be surprised given that California Republicans, even the conservative ones, probably more moderate than some of their Republican friends in other parts of the country, maybe.
Right, but John McCain had a strong support here in 2000 when he ran against George Bush, and had very strong support, was running about even with Giuliani in earlier polls. Now he's running a distant fourth. I think there's just a sense that the wheels have come off the McCain campaign. And even in California, which you think would be sort of friendly territory to McCain, he seems to be fading away.
Let's talk, and before we wrap this thing up on all things presidential, I mean, I think we have to mention a story that is bubbling around out there. The national media caught it a little bit. The California media has caught it some. It's still very early in this. But that is a potential ballot initiative for the June 2008 ballot that was drafted by a prominent Republican Party attorney that would change California's status of winner-take-all for electoral votes to essentially give Republicans a slice of California's votes if they carry X number of counties, and something that Republicans would love, Democrats would hate. I mean, this thing, you know, and I think what we really don't know is we really don't know if there's any money and power behind it yet or not, but boy, it would be quite an explosive campaign if there was.
Well, it's gotten a lot of national attention, and a committee has been formed this week to raise money against the campaign. I mean, look, the Democrats think that this initiative would essentially ensure that a Republican wins the White House in 2008. Democrats, to win nationally, have a very, very narrow margin of error, as we've seen over the last two elections. They basically have written off the South and need to sweep the Northeast and the Midwest and hope to pick up a couple of states in the Southwest and the West if they want to win. This would, right now, California is 54, is that right, 54 electoral votes?
I believe so.
Go to
someone will correct us if we're
I'm
wrong.
I'm sure. Go winner take all. If you win California by one vote, you get all the electoral votes. This initiative would give two votes to the statewide winner, and then one to each of the winner in each congressional district. So most estimations, just because of the way California is divided, that would guarantee about 20 electoral votes for Republicans, which is, you know, that's the same number of electoral votes that exist in all of Ohio, roughly.
Would really change the dynamics of a national presidential campaign.
Absolutely.
If somebody could come out here to get those votes versus barnstorming part,
yeah,
of the country.
And would make it next to impossible for a Democrat to win nationally, to put together the 270 electoral votes they need to win. So, obviously, if this thing does qualify for the ballot, whether it's just a distraction or people making mischief, it's gotten a lot of national attention. It's been written about in the New Yorker and Newsweek, and I know that people in Washington are watching. Whether Californians are paying attention yet, I'm not so sure.
Do you think, just quickly, Anthony, I don't have any good intel on this. Do you think it has any real backing financially? I mean, the proponent is an attorney who most people never heard of, but reporters certainly know him. His name, Tom Hiltak, is a prominent Republican attorney who,
sure,
also was a campaign attorney for Arnold Schwarzenegger at one point. But
right.
do you think it has any backing?
I don't know. I mean, it's early yet. I can't imagine that this thing actually has a chance of winning. But, you know, it could be strategically, it could be a way to get the Democrats to spend some resources here to ensure that this doesn't happen. You know, whether or not there's a campaign for it, you know, once it qualifies for the ballot, it's something that the other side has to take very seriously.
I was going to say, it's politics playbook 101. You don't necessarily have to spend money yourself if you can get your opponent to spend money somewhere else.
Absolutely.
It's always the whole part of the game, not just part of it. Well, I think at this point we need to let you do the rest of the business in the Malibu Bureau.
Whatever that is. I'm getting my suntan lotion on now.
Well, I was going to say, I've been in Philadelphia at one point. You've been in Malibu a couple of times. Sometime we'll reconvene back in Sacramento, and we'll have to find ourselves a third person who'll come back in case our pro bono correspondent has decided to fly the coop and, I don't know, go international or something.
Who knows? Who knows what she's up to?
Mysteries abound.
Yes.
Well, that'll do. Have a good time in Malibu.
Thank you, sir. Have a good time in Sacramento.
Oh, well, you know, as always, holding down the fort, as we said. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, and, well, I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio and the California Report. We'll see you next time.